All set, recorder on?
Okay, very good. I'd like to call the Martville Planning and Zoning Commission regular meeting of April 28th, 2026 to order.
Pledge of allegiance, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, Mr. Secretary.
Okay. Commissioner Longton.
Here.
Commissioner Terry.
Here.
Commissioner Gillette.
Present.
Commissioner Pike.
Here.
And Commissioner Desjardins here, that's me. And Commissioner Lundey.
Here.
Commissioner Kolick.
Here.
Commissioner Summers.
Here.
Chairman Pena.
Here.
And Mark Myers.
Here.
Here.
So we have a full boat. Commissioner Myers is welcome to get involved with any dialogue this evening, but he will not be voting. Okay. Additions or changes to the agenda this evening, we have none. Agenda item 5 minutes, and I'm going to do this in a group. Approval of the March 24th, April 2nd, and approval of the April 8th regular and special meeting minutes. Entertain a motion to accept those.
So moved. Second.
Okay. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Anyone oppose? Anyone abstain?
I abstain.
Okay. Very good. Minutes are approved. We have no public hearing this evening. So under agenda item old business 7A, first item is 26 site 1, 245 route 32, 070-010-000. Modification of a modified site plan for the 22-unit condominium development. Meredith.
Meredith Badaluco for the record. The applicant has stated that they are seeking a modification to the approved site plan to proceed with the remaining phases of development and to allow building construction and occupy on a phase-by-phase basis. Modifications implemented during construction of phase one necessitated submission of the site plan modification in order to continue with site development in a manner consistent with field conditions. I did give you a list of the background information for this property along with all of the approvals. I received an original approval in 2022. And has been before the commission for the original approval, the modification for the phasing, and for the issuance of the substantial CZC for phase one, as there are some issues with phase one that did not meet the approved plan. Stacy brought this before you. You all agreed if they had met certain qualifications back then that you would allow her to issue a substantial CZC. Part of that approval was that they had to come back before you listing everything that was in phase one that didn't meet the original approved plan and listing all the changes that were going to be required for phase two, three, and four. Those changes include the phase one building is now located 33.5 feet from the property line versus the approved 39.9 feet. The phase four building will now be located 5 feet from the front parking area versus the approved 10 feet. The distance between the phase three and phase four building is now 17 feet versus the approved 13 feet. The location of the parking spaces have been changed. Same number of approved parking spaces, however, the locations are different. They had to relocate the utility vaults and service routing modifications as required by Eversource. The stairs that were planned on the side of phase two building have now been eliminated. The at-grade patios to the rear of phase one and phase two buildings have been eliminated and replaced with air conditioning units, which are shown on the proposed plans. They've raised the grade at the end of the driveway to facilitate gravity sewers and raised the wall a 7-foot average. There's now a new proposed wall behind phase 3 building. They removed the sanitary pump system and proposed gravity connections to the existing gravity sewer under phase 1 building. And the domestic water service location's been changed from the front of the units to behind phase 3 and phase 4 units. And they have shifted some of the lighting locations due to the parking lot and parking space revisions. I did have some technical review comments previously, and they have addressed all of my technical review comments. The town engineer reviewed, and they've addressed all of his comments. The fire marshal asked for a fire truck, the ladder truck turning radius, and they have shown that, and he states he has no further comments at this time. The building official had comments regarding the accessible parking, and they did move them to where he states they more closely align with the building code. He had some questions regarding snow storage during the phasing, and they did move the construction fencing back 28 feet to allow for some snow storage during the phasing plans. WPCA, they've addressed all of their comments. The police department had no additional comments. In your staff report, there are several pictures that I took when Stacy and I did an inspection on April 16th. Pictures, you'll see that there's some construction debris, some trash, some ENS controls that haven't been maintained. The temporary sediment basin is not constructed and maintained in accordance to the approved plan. The construction phasing fencing is broken. We're thinking most likely due to snow removal this year. Snow storage. The stockpiles are not located where they were shown, and they do not have ENS controls around them. And there's some broken sight lighting and some broken barriers that were required as part of the phase one CZC. Should the commission decide to approve this plan tonight, I did put as one of the listed conditions of approval that they shall address all of these issues prior to getting a zoning permit. The applicant's engineer is here to further explain.
Can you hear me on this? Is this working? Good evening. For the record, my name is Douglas Rich, licensed landscape architect with Fuller Engineering and Land Surveying, office in Bridgeport, Connecticut. So basically, what Meredith just said, everything she's illustrated everything that we've done, but I can go through this specifically and show highlight some of the bigger items. Which generated this revision. One of the conditions that was required was that we show an as-built survey of phase one in this location. We did a topographic survey, and from that generated a number of items that needed to be corrected, which we did to the best that he could, although there are some more things that need to be addressed, and we don't have a problem with that at all. So I highlighted a couple items on the plan in yellow so you can correlate it to your, I think you have 8.5 by 11 or 11 by 17s. Part of the changes to the parking, we pushed this back, the rear retaining wall a little bit to get more parking, two more spaces in there when we were swapping spaces as a result of the transformer units that were required by the utility company. Those locations are here and here. They also made us put transformers in the fronts, which were unknown at the time of the application. So consequently, these locations caused a slight shifting of the units in order to get spaces, proper spacing around these units. I'm also showing the yellow here is the switch from the handicap spaces that were along the street. Now it's up to the buildings closer to any unit that the guests may need. This resulted in a we used to have a small island here, a collector island here, which connected this parking lot to the sidewalk system on the street. However, this is now centered on the parking stripe with a ADA code compliant handicap ramp at that location, and it should work just fine for a connection, pedestrian connection. No other changes have been made or proposed along the street. Building department asked for snow storage areas. I've highlighted those. You'll see on the phasing plan here, we've, as Meredith mentioned, we pushed the temporary stockade fencing back so that during phase two, phase three, and phase four, we'll have more area to stockpile that snow in those areas. Down here, I've, as a comment from the fire marshal, I now show turning movements for the aerial fire truck that they need to get in there, and it shows ample ability to get in there and fight any fire that might occur. I'm not going to go through the phasing plan, I guess, pretty much. My other plans will show basically what I'm going to talk about. As Meredith mentioned, we switched from a gravity or from a pump system, a force main system for the sewer, in lieu of a gravity, and that necessitated bringing these pads up a little bit so that we could get enough pitch from the back to the front. Again, another major, or not major, but another change to the plans is the water service at the back of the units. Maintains more separation between sanitary and water. We've eliminated the fire hydrant in there per the fire marshal, so that dedicated fire run is no longer exists. It's just sanitary in front of the units. No changes to the sedimentation and erosion control plan. The applicant initially placed solar light fixtures in front of phase one, and he put too many. He only needed to put two. However, one of the comments that we received was to go back to the original hardwired lighting system. So we are removing this central light fixture and then changing the light fixtures to the specified light fixtures that we had originally designed, and then all the other fixtures as part of the original application are still the same. And that's really it in a nutshell. It's not small changes had a lot of ripple effect through the project, and we tried to address everything. I think we've done that to the satisfaction of staff and the other departments. Okay. If you have any questions, I'd be helping.
Start with you, Chuck.
Okay, the stairwell that was removed from the side of the building, was that, could that have been used as a fire escape? And if so, what replaces that emergency egress?
No, it was not for a fire escape. It was more for maintenance issues to get from the back to the bottom. However, the town engineer suggested that we put a double swing gate over an ASBOT behind unit 13 or 12. So that access to the back now is along the property line in this direction through there, and then they can maintain the level spreader and all maintenance things. So,
Lisa?
I just, is that going to be adequate for snow removal, what you have there for all those units? It looks kind of small.
It's always been tight, and it will be tight, but the concept for phase two and three, no problem. There's tons of room for that. As we reach phase four, it's still going to be tight, and the applicant has to maintain the piles, remove snow, whatever's necessary to keep that everything clear and safe. So that's however he does it. These will be permanent spaces up in here. May not be enough, depending on what kind of year we have for snowfall, but that's his obligation.
Mickey? Questions? Rules?
Lights and fire hydrant. Why was the fire hydrant removed?
It was deemed not necessary because we have a fire hydrant nearby. So we didn't, the initial concept, we had a fire hydrant right in the central location.
Right.
I inadvertently put it back in, and I wasn't supposed to, I guess. So they yelled at me for having it in there, so I took it out. It was not necessary.
And how did we get the solar lights?
I don't know. That's
okay.
That's the applicant doing what he's done. So he is going to change those out.
Stacy Radford, zoning and wetlands officer. Those were installed when I had gone and done my as-built inspection.
Right.
He had installed those. He ran out of the number of electrical boxes that he could have on that phase one unit, so he could not put electricity to those lights.
The meters.
I'm sorry, he ran out of the number of meters. He could only have six for the building, and he had six units. He would have had to back charge one of those units for the electricity usage to light the parking. So he put solar lights in, but that was one of the conditions, was that they were going to be corrected this come around when they modified the plan.
So how do you correct it? You had it on the meter, or someone could be back?
Yeah, they need a house meter, which is a dedicated meter for all electrical outside. He will be putting conduit and all necessary connections from that meter throughout the project. So connect these up right now, get these things
that will be dedicated to all the lighting.
What's that?
That will be dedicated to
yes.
lighting?
Yes.
Thank you.
Joe.
So with the issues that we have, has there been a plan put into place to prevent future issues on these next three phases?
I certainly hope so. I mean, it's if he doesn't, he's got to come back again and again. So, I mean, we've had many discussions with him, and he's to tell him, you know, just follow the plans and do your thing and try to. The outstanding items that Meredith took photographs of the site and the condition that it is for stockpiling and things, we have no problem with requiring
firm,
that.
Is your firm locating the foundations? Because there was an
yes.
issue with the foundations of being off several feet.
I've
actually put it as a condition of approval.
Okay. Yep. All foundations are primarily staked out by us.
Okay.
But how it got moved, I don't know. We did the as-built, and that's what we discovered. So it wasn't our doing.
They're very close to setback lines.
Mm-hmm.
So we went a step further. The foundations shall be staked out by a land surveyor. The land surveyor shall locate the formwork prior to the pour and provide an as-built for review and approval by the ZEO. Once the ZEO approves the formwork as built, the foundation may be poured. After the pour, an LS has to locate the foundation and provide another as built. So that's what we're gonna start doing on any buildings that are close to our setback mm-hmm. lines, so that we don't
okay.
end up in this.
And the surveying is our company as well, so everything is in-house.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Josh.
Is this the building that was supposedly sinking in one spot? Or do I have this wrong? Is it a different one?
This is, I don't know if that's the building that was rooms next to Citizens Bank.
Right.
Okay. So I had, didn't make any comments as part of this application as to that.
Okay.
That scared me.
Sarah?
All set.
John?
Oh, yes. I'm very familiar with the building and everything else. The neighbor next door, I can see that building is almost pretty high into that building. Do you have any complaint from that neighbor?
No. Not to my knowledge.
I was living in that house. I wouldn't care much for that building. You're in my line of sight, or you call it getting too much shade from them or whatever.
Not to my knowledge.
Okay, and all that trash and everything that had been picked up and all that?
That will be picked up if it hasn't already. It's all been documented in here.
Yeah, it will be one thing. Well, it will be another. Okay.
But that's a condition of approval before we even start on phase two, so he has to do that.
Okay. Mark, did you have anything?
No
any
comment.
Questions at all? Okay. All right. Meredith, anything else you'd like to add?
I am good, thank you.
Okay. So, we recognize, apparently from everyone's input, that this is an extremely tight site. His representative is aware it's a very tight site. Let's hope the developer recognizes it's a very, very tight site, or it's not a game of horseshoes. Almost isn't good enough on this one, right? So we'll have to keep a close eye on it and do what we do. Dennis? Okay. We have a motion, suggested motion in your package. I'll entertain that motion. I just want to ask one quick question. In your conditions, did you include the report and the photos, or are we to add that?
I included in there that they had to address all the items that were listed in the photographs before zoning permit.
So it's in those conditions. Commissioner Terry.
I make a motion to approve with condition numbers 1-25 as indicated in the staff report dated April 27th, 2026, application number 26 site 1 for a 22-unit multifamily development and associated site improvements at 245 Route 32 in parentheses 070-010 -000 close parentheses in accordance with the Montville zoning regulations and the application supporting documentation and a plan set titled proposed 22-unit condominium development 245 Norwich New London Road Connecticut Route 32 Montville Connecticut applicant Western Group LLC 338 Westport Road Wilton Connecticut owner Wilton Holdings LLC 338 Westport Road, Wilton, Connecticut, prepared by Fuller Engineering and Land Surveying, dated 1/25/22, revised 4/21/26. Conditions. General conditions. 1. This approval is for specific use, site, and structures identified in the application. Any change in the nature of use, site, or the structure will require new approvals from the Planning and Zoning Commission. 2. This project shall be constructed and maintained in accordance with the referenced plan. 3. Soil erosion and sediment control shall be installed in accordance with the approved plan set and inspected by the zoning officer prior to the start of any work for each phase. 4. An approved zoning permit is required for each phase prior to the start of any work. 5. By acceptance of this permit and conditions, the applicant and owner knowledge the right of town staff to periodically enter upon the subject property for the purpose of determining compliance with the terms of this approval. 6. No business/use under this permit/approval shall be initiated until a certificate of zoning compliance is approved by the zoning officer. 7. All previous conditions of approval remain in effect. Site-specific conditions. 8. Foundations for phase 2, 3, 4 shall be staked out by LS. LS shall locate formwork prior to pour and provide as-built for review and approval by zoning officer. And once zoning officer approves formwork as built, the foundation may be poured. After pour, LL shall locate foundation and provide an as-built plan for review and approval by ZEO. Construction of building shall not start until the ZEO has reviewed and approved said as-built. 11. All drainage structures proposed for the project shall be constructed and maintained post-construction in accordance with the approved plan set. 12. All landscaping shall be maintained post-construction. 13. Owner of property used for parking lot and or loading shall maintain such area and all required sidewalks and buffer areas in good condition without holes and free of all dust, trash, and other debris. 14. Site signage not shown on plan shall require an approved zoning permit prior to installation. Conditions to be met prior to signing of plans. 15. All plans submitted for signature shall bear the seal and life signature of the appropriate professionals responsible for the preparation of plans. 16. The applicant shall also submit final plans as approved by the Commission in a digital format per zoning reg section 17.3. 17. A list outlining how the conditions of approval have been met shall be submitted along with final plans submitted for signature. 18. A list outlining all changes to the plans shall be submitted along with the final plans submitted for signature. The list should cite the sheet number where each change has been made. Conditions to be met prior to the issuance of zoning permits. 19. Four sets of paper plans with any required revisions incorporated shall be submitted to the land use development for signature of the commission. 20. Any required certificates and or approvals from the state or federal agencies, i.e. CT, DOT, DEEP, Army Corps of Engineers, shall be obtained by the applicant and submitted to the Land Use and Development Office. Any changes to the plan required by such entities may require a plan modification for the Planning and Zoning Commission. 21. A soil erosion and sediment control bond shall be in effect in the amount of $27,258. In a form acceptable to the finance director. No bond or portion thereof shall be released without prior approval of the zoning officer and or director of land use and development. 22. A pre-construction meeting between the applicant, site contractors, project engineer, and town staff shall be held. 23. No zoning permit shall be issued until the items indicated in the pictures attached to the staff report dated April 27, 2026 have been addressed. Conditions which must meet prior to issuance of certificate of zoning compliance. 24. Complete as-built plans certified to Class A2 accuracy shall be submitted prior to the issuance of any certificate of zoning compliance. The as-built plan shall also contain a certification of our professional engineer that they have inspected the site improvements and that they have been installed in accordance with the approved plans. Any deviations or omissions must be noted. 25. No certificate of occupancy or other final approval may be issued until the zoning officer has signed off on the final work. Note, the conditions of approval do not take the place of other requirements found in the town codes, regulations, and applications, and application instructions. Do I read the last line? No.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second. Roll call, Mr. Secretary. Any discussion on... Yes, before we vote, go ahead, Josh.
Is there any provisions in place to ensure that the material brought in for underneath the building is structural fill with compaction results?
I would think that's going to be... Go ahead.
We are structural engineers, and we have geotechnical capabilities, so we can provide those services.
I'm just seeing loads of fill brought in there and that are on the ground there, and they look random, and you know, good structural fill usually is tested and approved by an outfit.
I think that should be noted to the building department to Doug to follow up on that. All right. Okay. Any other discussion?
I just have one comment on the phasing on the picture for the fencing. Phasing fence shall be maintained at all times in accordance. That means it needs to be
up. So that residents and or public don't fall into an excavator.
I want to make sure that's understood by this. Okay. Thank you.
And there was a typo on the word.
The phase that.
It shouldn't look like this.
Right, right, right. It just says shall be maintained. I want to make sure you guys are going to put it back up. And thank you.
Can we do a roll call vote?
Sure we can.
All right.
Okay, a yay or nay. Commissioner Longton.
Favor.
Yes. Commissioner Terry.
Favor.
Yes. Commissioner Gillette.
Favor.
Commissioner Pike.
Favor.
Commissioner Jones, yes. Commissioner Lundy.
In favor.
Commissioner Kolick.
In favor.
Commissioner Summers?
Favor.
And Chairman Pena.
In favor.
100%.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
All righty, moving on. Agenda item 7B, which is 26, Site 2, dash 888, Route 32, 083-005-000. This is an accessory parking lot. The applicant's Joe Pinnell. The owner is Depot Road Property, LLC. Meredith.
Staff has requested some revised documentation. The plan that was provided was difficult to read as to what was existing conditions and what was proposed. They have not provided us with updated application materials yet, so I am going to request that we continue this to the next meeting, May 26, 2026.
Motion.
Motion to continue?
Motion.
Second.
Okay, we'll give it to you, Chuck. You got the second. Lisa made the motion. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone oppose? Anyone abstain? Continue to the May 26, 2026 meeting. 26 is there, huh? Okay, agenda item 8, new business. 8A, 26, site 3. 061-002-000 Noble Hill Road, mitigation of the unpermitted removal of earth products. Applicant owner Jeffrey Phillips and Jennifer Michaels. Meredith.
Thank you. This application is to correct an ongoing violation that Stacy had on the property. On about February 20th, 2025, this commission had received from the town of Basra a notice of a public hearing for a proposed event venue located at 410 Salem Turnpike. While looking at those documents that I had received to see if it would impact any of the neighbors on our GIS, I noticed that there was a large area of disturbance on this property. I researched the file and I did not find any permits for this activity. I notified Stacy. She sent out a notice of apparent violation and a request for voluntary compliance to the owners. The owner contacted her pretty quickly. We went out on March 14th of 2025. Stacy, myself, town engineer Kyle Halbert, and soil scientist Bob Russo. We met with the property owner, Jeffrey Phillips. He agreed to walk the entire property with us, showed us everything. The pictures that are in this staff report are from our site visit that day. He also had to go before the Inland Wetlands Commission because some of this was in the wetlands, and he did obtain on August 21st, 2025, an after-the-fact permit for excavation and removal within regulated areas. Our zoning regulations, section 4.11.11.3, allows for excavation operations involving the removal of excess material up to 500 cubic yards in all zones via zoning permit. I had requested at the time that we noticed this that Kyle calculate approximately how many cubic yards were removed prior to the issuance of any apparent violation. By using the state aerials and contours, he believed that approximately 25,000 to 30,000 cubic yards were removed from the property. Therefore, Stacy did issue that notice of apparent violation. As this property is located within a residential zoning district, they are not allowed to remove greater than 500 cubic yards. According to the application documents that were provided, the total disturbed area is 3.03 acres. The applicant is proposing to grade 1.95 acres of the disturbance to slopes that are no more than 2:1, with grading occurring towards the center of the disturbed area. Once the grading is performed in an effort to create slopes that are safer for anyone entering the property, topsoil will be placed on the disturbed area with a seed mix indicated on the plans to stabilize the soils. The town engineer has requested the thickness of the topsoil for the non-wetland soil areas to be shown on the final plan, as well as temporary erosion control blankets, hydro seed with bonded fiber matrix or equal should be provided on finished slopes that are steeper than 3.1. I did include that should you decide to approve this tonight. That is included in the conditions of approval. Like I said, the pictures that are provided are from when we went on that first site walk. Stacy and the Wetlands Commission and the soil scientists have done additional site walks as part of those permitting process. And Attorney McCoy is here on behalf of the applicant to further describe it.
Good evening. For the record, Attorney William McCoy from Heller, Heller McCoy, representing the applicants. They are Jeffrey Phillips and Jennifer Michaels. This project has been the subject of significant activity within the Land Use Office. As Meredith has indicated, there was a prior application after the fact with the Inland Wetlands Commission, which was approved. It was consistent with what we're requesting tonight in terms of a mitigation of the removal of earth products from the property, which were clearly not permitted. The purpose of the application is to regrade the area, and the total disturbed area is about 3 acres. The area which was involved in the westerly side of the property and is the subject of the wetlands permit is about 1 acre, and the remainder is the easterly side, which is essentially what we're here for tonight. The grading is to accomplish a finished grade of no more than 2-to-1 slopes, with the grading to be accomplished to slope toward the center of the scarred areas. There is a seed mix on the application and the plans for the application for the restoration of the and vegetation of the area. One of the comments by CLA, the consulting engineers, was to have a definition of the amount of topsoil to be placed, and I would suggest that a 3-inch depth for the topsoil be considered by this commission as a condition of approval. I will note that the comments by CLA were appropriate, and certainly we have no difficulty with those being conditions of approval. Clearly, this is an after-the-fact issue. We make no bones about the fact that this was not something that was permitted, but this is a mitigation plan for purposes of restoring the property to a condition that is acceptable to both the Inland Wetlands Commission and hopefully to the Planning and Zoning Commission as well. And I'll take whatever questions you may have with respect to this matter. I will tell you that this has gone over a great deal of work by the staff. I think the staff report is perfectly accurate in terms of its description. And I would point out that Mr. Phillips was very quick to come in and try and work with the commission and with the staff to rectify the problem.
I'll start on this side. Mark, questions?
No, I don't have any questions.
Joe?
No.
Josh?
Nope.
Sarah?
No questions.
John?
None right now.
Wills?
Yes. You mentioned 1 acre. It says here in the staff report 1.95. Is it 1 acre or 1.95?
The total area is a little over 3. It's one, right. I believe it is, and I apologize, I'll have to go to, I believe it's 1.95 plus, okay. 1.8, and that gets you to the 3.3.
And where do you come up with the thought process of 3 inches of topsoil will be sufficient?
That was based upon discussions with the with the engineer. He felt that that was sufficient. Again, I leave it to, if the commission feels that a greater amount is necessary. But again, this is just topsoil to create vegetation, and I would submit that probably 3 inches is appropriate.
So the engineer, you talked to the engineer about it?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. That's it.
Nikki? Lisa? Fire away, Chuck.
Yeah, a little bit further on the topsoil. The average depth of topsoil in Connecticut, undisturbed, is between 2 and 10. But mitigated topsoil usually is between 4 and 8. Mm-hmm. So that's more what I would like to see.
Okay. And again, we're here on this application for the commission to make a decision. If the commission believes that a condition of 4 inches, for example, is more appropriate, we'll abide by it.
Personally, I think 3 inches is a little thin.
The only thing I will tell you, and perhaps staff can weigh in on this, if you go back out to the site after the disturbance, a lot of the vegetation has taken already, even without the addition of topsoil. But I don't mean to quarrel that. I'm just letting you know that
Understood.
Historically that's what's happening.
Yep. I'll just chime in a little bit if I can. Based on the pictures, it looks like a pretty gravelly type soil, well drained. If we're going to keep something growing for vegetation, you know, naturally occurring 2 to 8, 6 inches is probably the right number to keep stuff growing out there. Yeah. I don't know if that's a hardship or. The soil's coming from on site. I think that's would be adequate. Make that part of the condition.
We're here before you, and obviously this commission can set whatever condition.
All right.
I would suggest to you that that we were proposing 3, but if the commission has a desire for a greater depth, then we'll have to deal with that.
All right. Any other questions for Attorney McCoy?
No.
All right. We have a motion. Oh.
On the topsoil issue, Dennis Scudiere, director, 6 inches is usually the standard for establishing new ground cover for it to be sustainable. 3 inches will look good for a little while, but over the long term, the roots go much deeper. So 6 inches is generally a specified area, or a specified amount.
Kind of what I'm thinking. So, thank you, Dennis. Meredith, you have anything else? Yep. Got it. Okay. Would anyone like to make the motion? Chuck?
I'd like to make the motion that we change the topsoil depth to 6 inches.
Okay.
Second.
Would you like to make a are we making a motion just on the 6 inches? Or do we want to just include it in our...
You want to just include it in our motion, just right. To add the 6 inches there?
Right, just include it in the motion.
Okay.
So you're going to make the motion, Chuck?
Yes, I will.
All right, very good. Add the 6 inches.
There you go.
Yeah.
I'm going to go right here on 9A, okay?
Thank
right.
you.
Right here.
I make a motion okay. that we change the wording of condition 9A to say the proposed topsoil thickness should be 6 inches for the disturbed non-wetland soil areas.
Okay.
Just going to read the whole motion.
Do we have a second on that?
Okay.
I'll second that.
All right. We have a second. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Anyone oppose? Anyone abstain? Okay. So it'll be 6 inches.
6 inches.
Now we're going to do the motion.
Okay, you can use yours now.
You got that, Chuck?
Use mine.
Yep.
You can
okay.
I make a motion to approve with conditions 1 through 19 as indicated in the staff report. Dated April 22nd, 2026, application number 26, site 3, for necessary grading for the mitigation of the unpermitted removal of earth products from the subject property at the parcel identified at 061-002-000 Noble Hill Road, in accordance with the Montville zoning regulations and the application, supporting documentation, and a plan set entitled Topographic Survey with Wetlands, prepared for Jeffrey Phillips, Assessor Number 61-002, Noble Hill Road, Montville, Connecticut, dated May 12, 2025, revised 3-2026. Conditions. General conditions. One, this approval is for the specific use identified in the application. Any change in the nature of use, site, or addition of structures will require new approvals from the Planning and Zoning Commission. This project shall be constructed and maintained in accordance with the reference plans. Soil erosion and sediment control shall be installed in accordance. Number three, soil erosion and sediment control shall be installed in accordance with the approved plan set and the and inspected by the zoning officer prior to the start of any work. Four, an approved zoning permit is required prior to the start of any work. Five, by acceptance of this permit and the conditions, the applicant and owner acknowledge the right of staff, of town staff, to periodically enter upon the subject property for the purpose of determining compliance with the terms of this approval. Six, no use under this permit approval shall be initiated until a certificate of zoning compliance is approved by the zoning officer. Site-specific conditions. Seven, all drainage structures proposed for the project shall be constructed and maintained post-construction in accordance with the approved plan set. Eight, all landscaping shall be maintained post-construction. Conditions to be met prior to signing of plans. Nine, plans shall be revised to address the town engineer's comments dated 4-17-26. The revised plan shall be reviewed and approved by the town engineer. A, the proposed topsoil thickness of 6 inches for the disabled non-wetland soil areas. B, temporary erosion control blanket, hydro seed with bonded fiber matrix or equal should be provided on the finished slopes that are steeper than 3 to 1. 10, all plans submitted for signature shall bear the seal and live signature of the appropriate professionals responsible for the preparation of the plans. 11, the applicant shall also submit final plans as approved by the commission in a digital format per zoning regulation section 17.3. 12, a list outlining how the conditions of approval have been met shall be submitted along with final plans submitted for signature. 13, a list of outlining all changes to the plan shall be submitted along with final plans submitted for signature. The list should cite the sheet number where each change has been made. Conditions to be met prior to the issuance of zoning permits. 14, four sets of paper plans with any required revisions incorporated shall be submitted to the Land Use Department for signature of the commission. Any required certificates and or approvals from state or federal agencies, i.e. CTDOT, DEEP, Army Corps of Engineers, shall be obtained by the applicant and submitted to the Land Use and Development Office. Any changes to the plans required by such entities may require a plan modification from the Planning and Zoning Commission. 16, no bond or portion thereof shall be released without prior approval of the zoning officer and or director of land use and development. 17, a pre-construction meeting between the applicant, the constructors, the contractors, project engineer, and town staff shall be held. Conditions which must be met prior to issuance of a certificate of zoning compliance. 18, complete as-built plan certified to Class A2 accuracy shall be submitted prior to the issuance of any certificate of zoning compliance. The as-built plan shall also contain a certificate by a professional engineer that they have inspected the site improvements and that they have been installed in accordance with the approved plans. Any deviations or omissions must be noted. 19, no certificate of occupancy or any other final approval may be issued until the zoning officer has signed off on the final work. Note, the conditions of approval do not take the place of other requirements found in the town codes, regulations, and application instructions. Should the commission vote to deny the application, it shall state its reasons on the record.
Okay, thank you, Chuck. All right, so we have a motion to approve.
I'll second that.
A motion and a second. Any discussion? Do a roll call? Okay. Sure.
Commissioner Longton.
Favor.
Commissioner Terry.
Favor.
Commissioner Gillette.
Favor.
Commissioner Pike.
Favor.
Commissioner John, yes for me. Commissioner Lundy.
In favor.
Commissioner Kolick.
In favor.
Commissioner Summers.
Favor.
Chairperson Pena.
In favor. Okay, very 100%. Good.
And I just want to
thank you.
I just want to thank Mr. Phillips. He was a pleasure to work with during this violation. We don't get that often.
Thank you.
Fabulous.
Okay. Moving on into new business, agenda item 8B, number 26, site 4, 176 Meeting House Lane, 046-069-000, Pickleball Court Parking Lot Improvements. Oh, Town of Mottville Public Works is the owner, Town of Mottville, Camp Oakdale. Meredith.
This application that's before us is for the reconstruction of an existing parking lot located near the pickleball court and tennis courts mm-hmm. at Camp Oakdale. Mm-hmm. I did give you some background of just the tennis court and pickleball court area, as obviously this is the entire Camp Oakdale site. This is before you tonight, since we updated our zoning regulations, Section 18 off-street parking standards. No alterations, improvements, or modifications to an existing parking area or establishment of a new parking area until a site plan in accordance with Section 17 of these regulations has been approved by the decision-making authority. Again, this is an existing parking area and it's being reconstructed at Camp Oakdale. Per the town engineer, the parking area will remain within the same footprint, with the exception of approximately 3 feet of widening at the exit drive to allow better maneuvering for larger vehicles. Additional stormwater infrastructure is also proposed that will connect into the existing stormwater management system. And part of the application, they provided a stormwater management report. They are also asking, per zoning regulation section 17.5, a determination of applicability. I have listed all of the sections that they are asking for a determination, as well as their reasoning for asking for those. Would you like me to read them, or would you like Kyle to cover them, or?
Your pleasure. Kyle, would you prefer to go over those with us?
Yeah,
I can.
Oh,
okay. Whatever you two choose, you're present.
Right now? Do you want me to go on, or do you want to go? Go for it, go ahead. Yeah.
Okay. Kyle, state your name for the record, please, because no one knows you here.
Yep, and I will get away from behind the board in a second, too, so you can see me.
I can see you fine.
No problem. No problem.
Kyle Hobbert from CLA Engineers, here tonight on behalf of the Town of Mottville, as Meredith said, for the pickleball court parking lot reconstruction. We are asking for determinations under section 17.4. One of the first ones is 17.4.3. We're asking that the entire property has not been surveyed. The entire property is about 79.8 acres. As you're aware, it encompasses all of the fields up on the top of the hill. This parking lot's an existing parking lot. We're staying generally within the existing footprint, so we did not feel that an entire survey required for this one. The next one, 17.4.6. No easements or right-of-way are known in the rural development area. We did look at the deeds, and there is nothing indicated in this area. Rock outcrops, 17.4.7. Rock outcrops in the vicinity of the work area have been shown. We've used an aerial underlay as the background for the plan. There is a slope to the north of the parking lot that's wooded. That does have some ledge in it. And there's no disturbance, no proposed activity in that area. 17.4.8. The structures in the work area have been located. The structures beyond the work area have not been located. Again, there's no activity, no proposed work, no action in those areas. 17.4.13. There's no new signage proposed. There is existing signage out there that will remain in place. 17.4.14. There's no new outdoor lighting proposed. There are lights out there in the parking lot now. There's two along the parking lot, and then the double head and the landscape island at the entrance exit drives. Those will remain. Again, no change to those at all. 17.4.17. There's no new sewage service facility proposed. The restroom facility is there. There's a septic system located. Public Works actually located the septic system on Friday. It's located under the existing sidewalk and partially under the parking lot in that area. Again, no change to the building, no change to the sewage. That will all remain in place. 17.4.20. Again, there's no sensitive environmental features in the vicinity of the parking lot. It's not located within an NDDB area, a natural diversity database area, and our soil scientists did review, and there's no direct wetlands in the area of the parking lot. 17.4.22, again, no new water service proposed. Again, the restrooms exist. They're served by a well on the property, and there's no change to the well water service or anything like that. That will remain in place. 17.4.23, there, again, there's no new restroom, sanitary, or waste disposal proposed. What exists will remain, and is so will be left as is. And then 17.4.25, the site is not located within a public drinking water watershed. The site is not within any kind of designated area.
Can you take it back over?
Yeah, sure.
So the commission will need to make a determination if the items that Kyle just talked about are required in order to meet a decision on this application. I've read over what Kyle provided and what he discussed tonight, and I feel that these items are not applicable as there's no proposed new signs, lighting, sewage, water, no sensitive environmental features within the vicinity of work. The site's not located within a public drinking and water supply watershed, and there's no known easements on the property. Further, we believe that the entire property does not need to be surveyed in order to reconstruct this parking area, as it's an existing parking area, and the existing structures beyond the work area and off-site have not been located as required by our regulations within 100 feet of the property line. We feel these are reasonable requests as there's no new proposed disturbance in the area. Per section 18B.25, parking areas which undergo pavement reclamation of more than 50% of the parking area shall provide at a minimum end islands when the decision-making authority determines that there's no adverse impact from the reduction of parking. This is part of our new regulations that went into effect yesterday. The applicant has indicated that there are 49 current parking spaces, and in order to meet the parking stall size and dead-end parking aisle requirements, there will be a loss of 4 parking spaces, as this parking area is also used as the overflow for the large pavilion. It's the applicant's opinion that there will be an adverse impact from any further reduction of parking. We did discuss it with Director Godier, and he agreed. Making sure he didn't change his mind. As Kyle stated, Public Works hired a subcontractor to video inspect the existing septic and excavate the septic tank and D-box on Friday, April 24th. The results of the inspection required the plans to be revised to show the actual location of those items, and I had sent that plan back out to Uncas Health. They looked at it, they reviewed it, and they are fine. The new catch basin and piping will be gasketed and watertight, and they signed off on that this morning. They've addressed all of my previous technical review comments, and they also indicated that the shade trees to the south of the parking lot have been located as to not interfere with the site lighting and underground utilities. We had asked them to put them 8 feet from the pavement, but there was the reason that they could not do that was because of the lighting. Building department reviewed, and he is satisfied. The fire marshal's office has no comment. Uncas Health approved the plan this morning. The PD had comments, and they had been addressed. And Dennis's comments regarding shade trees have been addressed. I did provide you with pictures of the existing condition of the parking lot that were taken on April 16th. And I'll turn it back over to Kyle, but just please note that we have two motions that need to be made for this application.
Okay. All right.
Thank you. Again, Kyle Hobbert from CLI Engineers. Meredith pretty much covered everything as part of the project, but I'll add a few more details. As you noted, the proposal is for 45 parking spaces in the lot now. There is a slight reduction in the impervious area because of the configuration of the parking spaces. Along the north edge, along the tree line, we'll pull the curb line in a little bit and reduced by about 2 feet of impervious area there. There's also a slight widening of the exit drive in this area here. That was a request of Public Works. Cars and trucks are generally fine running through there. Public Works, larger trucks, and sometimes their truck and trailer cut the corner, so they asked if we could widen that a little bit and provide more turning radius for their vehicles and their maintenance vehicles when they're through that area. We are providing two ADA compliant parking spaces right here in the northeast corner of the lot, generally where they are shown now. We'll also provide a new ADA compliant concrete sidewalk ramp. Right now there's a bituminous ramp that connects to the concrete sidewalks. This one will comply with the ADA standards and have a detectable warning strip at the end, like you see on a number of sidewalk areas. Again, as Meredith mentioned, Public Works did locate the septic system on Friday. It's located, the tank is located under the sidewalk right here, and then it runs to galleries that are under the parking lot. They were all found to be in good condition. We did have to make some last minute changes to the stormwater that we had proposed. We're proposing a new catch basin and an extension of the culvert to an existing catch basin. We did have to pull that back a little bit to provide separation to the existing septic system. I do want to thank Meredith and Alyssa Brochu from Uncas Health for turning around a quick review. We had some of the last minute changes to do that. We appreciate taking a look at that so greatly. Thank you. There are some stormwater improvements on the site. One of them is providing a little more grade to the parking lot. To allow the surface water to flow a little bit better to the existing stormwater system. We're also adding, like I said, one more catch basin in the flatter area near the restrooms to try and pick up some of the stormwater a little bit better than it does now. For water quality, we're proposing inlet filters in the two catch basins. They're very similar to the construction inlet filters, but they're a little more sturdy and robust. We'll remain in place. Capture and filter sediment before it enters the stormwater system. Again, the existing landscaping around the lot will remain. There's existing trees that remain. The tree line to the north will remain. And we're supplementing with six additional shade trees around the perimeter of the lot. And then during construction, we provided for ENS controls. Any stockpiles will have hay bales or silt fence around them. And then the drainage structures will have temporary inlet sediment bags prior to installing the permanent ones at the end of the project. Okay. With that, is there any questions?
Okay. All right.
Do you know if there's a weight rating for the galleys?
We did not see if they were H20 rated. They've been in there since the 70s and have not had any problems. So we anticipate that they will be fine.
You're going to have loaded triaxles going over the top of them. You'll find out.
You have to be parking there to go play pickleball.
No, when they pave the lot, you're going to have to drive over there with a load of triaxle. And at that point, that's where
they will. And Public Works has been, having their vehicles go over. It is plowed. It is, going over through their trucks. Top of the structures were about 32 inches down, I believe. So there is cover between the support anyway.
Joe, any questions?
Nope.
Okay. Sarah?
Nope.
Mark?
No, it just looks like, so you're going to remove all the asphalt, you're going to take it all out, and you got, it looks like you got a new process going in, but the subgrade, bring it down to subgrade, new process, and then remove all the blacktop.
Correct.
Full,
exactly.
Full depth, yeah?
Yes, right. Yes, exactly. Yep.
And then back to the galleries. How many are there? Do you know how many's in there for that septic system?
We aren't sure. We didn't get the camera all the way down to the end.
Gotcha. Yep. Yep. That's it.
Okay. John?
No. Parking lot.
Okay. Sarah, I asked you.
Yes, okay. I'm all set.
Go ahead, Chuck.
What are the dimensions of the parking lot?
The overall dimensions?
Yes.
On this north side, it'll be 231 feet long. That'll accommodate 22 parking spaces with the two ADA spaces. The south side is about 230 feet. Again, those will all be standard 10 by 18 spaces. And then the width is 60 feet. It'll be 218.
So a little bit smaller than a football field.
Yes.
Okay.
In total, it's about 0.4 of an acre.
Okay, my question is, has any consideration been given to an impervious parking lot?
Hmm.
That's a lot of water to run off into the storm drain. Tens of thousands of gallons in a typical Connecticut rainstorm.
That is correct. It is an existing lot, so it is reconstructing an existing lot in a slightly smaller footprint. Considering where the septic system is, we wouldn't want to promote too much infiltration directly around and over the septic system. It is also cost prohibitive as part of this. This is grant funded by a grant, so that would be cost prohibitive.
So a major storm could overwhelm the drainage system.
It doesn't now, and with the reduction in impervious, it'll be a better condition than currently exists.
Okay.
Lisa?
No, I have nothing.
Nikki? Wills?
Two questions. Septic system, I'm curious. So I assume it gets pumped by the town?
It had not in a long time. It was Friday.
So the galleries take the place of a leach field. Is that how I understand that?
Yes, the galleries are the leach field.
Okay.
Yes.
Yep. So the second thing I have is just baseline observation. Is there any particular reason why we're not concerned about the boundary markers? I mean, we know it's an existing parking lot.
Yep.
Is there any particular reason why we're not concerned about that?
Because you're within your existing footprint. If this was constructed, it's been in operation since the 1970s, I believe. We have a general idea of where the boundary markers are from the state road and from some other work in the area. And we're not working near any private property or by any of the parks or anything like that.
All right, thank you.
Okay.
I'll make a motion to find that zoning regulations section 17.4.3, 17.4.4, 17.4.6, 17.4.7, 17.4.8, 17.4.13, 17.4.14, 17.4.17, 17.4.20, 17.4.22, 17.4.23 and 17.4.25 for the reasons stated in the application materials and staff report dated April 28th, 2026 are not necessary or required to reach a decision on application 26 site 4.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any discussion? We can do a voice vote on this. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Anyone oppose? Anyone abstain? Okay, so that motion will pass. And Sarah, you're on a roll.
Oh.
If you don't want to read all of the conditions, I have listed the numbers. Sorry, I should have said that earlier.
Good training.
What?
Right.
Good training.
Unbelievable. I wasn't going to read it anyway.
Good training.
I make a motion to approve with conditions numbers 1 through 19 as indicated in the staff report dated April 28th, 2026. Application number 26, site 4 for the reconstruction of an existing parking lot near the pickleball and tennis courts at 176 Meeting House Lane, 046-069-000, in accordance with the Montville zoning regulations and the application. Supporting documentation and a plan set entitled Plan Prepared for Town of Montville CT,
Camp Oakdale Pickleball Court Parking Lot Improvements, 20 Simpson Lane, dated 3/30/26, revised 4/27/26.
I'll take that motion.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Do a little roll call, Mr.
Okay, roll call. Okay. Commissioner Lonten.
Favor.
Commissioner Terry.
Favor.
Commissioner Gillette.
Favor.
Commissioner Pike.
Favor.
And Secretary Discharge, yes. Commissioner Lundy.
In favor.
Commissioner Kulik.
In favor.
Commissioner Summer.
In favor.
Chairman Houdier.
In favor.
And
okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Kyle.
Yeah, I'll be happy.
Okay. Zoning matters. Stacy, CEO.
Stacy Radford, Zoning and Wetlands Officer, for the record. So this is the report for the period of March 24th, 2026 to April 27th, 2026. Total number of inquiries were 287.
Wow.
Total zoning permits open at the beginning of the reporting period were 385. There were a total of 35 permits closed. 16 were with the issuance of certificates of zoning compliance. 19 were permits closed for various other reasons. Some of them being just that I did have a couple that projects that were abandoned by applicants, and most of them were home occupations and trade name certificates that don't require certificates of zoning compliance. There were 37 field inspections completed. Total number of zoning permits issued, there were 41 approved, one was denied. That was denied because the property did not comply with the required size of acreage for keeping of chickens. That left us with a total number of zoning permits currently open of 391. There are three new zoning complaints. There are a total of 11 ongoing complaints or enforcement actions. There were three enforcement complaints or zoning complaints enforcement actions closed. There are no new wetlands complaints. There are three ongoing wetland complaints. None were closed. And for inland wetlands applications, there were a total of three. One had been approved, two have been continued as of our last meeting. And there are two new ZBA applications. Are there any questions?
Yes.
Knew it.
Well, just because I...
Fire away,
we denied
Pike.
Keeping of chickens, hens, denied. 10 Rich Lane?
That's the one I was saying.
Yeah, so I don't know where that is. I'm just curious where that even is.
Off of Dairy Hill.
Okay.
It's Richard Lane.
Richard, is that how it's pronounced? Richard. Yes. That's how it's pronounced? Richard.
Yes. I would have liked to go home. Unfortunately, they were just shy kept it under that. The required half an acre cap chicken. So.
Thank you.
She still has to come out and look at that. That's it.
Thank you, Stacy. Everybody else good? Any other questions?
Neighbors putting up boys.
Thanks, Stacy. Okay, agenda item 10. We have to review and act upon the 2026-2027 capital improvement plan. Looking for a motion to send a favorable report to the town council.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Dennis, are you guiding us on this?
I can guide you. I don't know it intimately. I did not put it together, but I don't think it is anything different as far as what you would expect from what you've seen in the past. The front page outlines the requested expenditures under the CIP for just this upcoming fiscal year, not for all 4 years. So this would be for 2026 through 2027, covering various department needs from Parks and Recreation, police, our department as well, I do want to bring to your attention five of them related to our work, Plan of Conservation and Development. $75,000 is being allocated, being requested. The zoning rewrite, $50,000. Subdivision regulations, $15,000. And design guidelines, $12,500. The work to do each of those is more than the amount allocated. It would be then covered in the following fiscal year. So if you look further into the report, you will see, and I don't know the exact pages, they're kind of a little bit all over, but you'll see additional balances, such as the Plan of Conservation and Development. We need a total of $100,000, so $75,000 would be allocated this year, $35,000 in fiscal year 27, 28. Zoning balance would be $50,000 in the year after that, $21,000 again also in year 27 through 28 for the subdivision, and then $13,500 for design guidelines. Some of the highlights from other requests here, I think there was $40 million in here for a new community center in the year 2028. There's expenditures for streetscapes out front, Newtown Green for implementing the findings or preliminary recommendations on the revive and renew plan. And those are expended out over the course of 4 to 5 years. On the front page, you'll see there's a heritage trail amount for $15,000. This is the multi-use path that we applied for a grant.
Excuse me. Where is the Heritage Trail?
Where will it be?
Is it a brand new trail?
Yeah. It would be, the vision is to have a multi-use trail that goes, connects the boat launch.
Yep.
Works its way over to the Route 163-32 intersection, yep. Crosses over, follows then from there, would cross Pickers Pond, pick up, and then it would follow the abandoned rail line,
yep.
Out towards Pequot, and then continue up. You might need to take some other paths depending on ownership,
right?
And, towards Bridge Street. Eventually, the long-term vision would be go all the way out and connect to Camp Oakdale.
Okay.
Uh-huh. But that would be the town match to. For the grant that we applied for back in November, I think it was, that we're still waiting to hear from DPON.
Okay.
And there's funds in here for future implementation of that too.
Thank you.
There's an assortment of requests from all departments, school buses.
It looks like one school bus.
Yeah, I'd be like, yeah, that's expensive school bus.
I'm only saying that because the board voted to ask for two school buses on a 5-year lease plan. And I think that's a little more than 130.
Dennis, the items for Plan of Conservation and Development and zoning regulations, rewrite subdivision regulations, is that to hire a consultant?
Yes.
Okay.
We have Ms. Lundy hired Goman & York, they will be starting. They'll also be doing our housing plan, okay. Which we received $125,000 from the Department of Housing. That is being wrapped up right now. Waiting for the state to give us the final contract. So they'll be doing all of this work over the next 2 years with us.
Was that a grant?
That was a grant.
Is that one that you applied for?
Yes.
Well done.
Thank you.
Mr. Pike, this school bus, what if we got out of the transportation business? Would the company buy a brand new, just take our brand new bus? How does that work?
Yeah.
Do they acquire our brand new bus? Or do we sell bus? How does that work, Mr. Pike? Do you know?
I do. So if, and it's a sensitive subject because there's union bargaining going on right now, and you wouldn't have, So I'm going to be very careful with my choice of words. To answer your question directly, if the town were to entertain looking at outsourcing the bus service, the outsourced company would buy the most newest buses. They won't buy them all, but they would buy buses within a certain time frame from us, yes.
Would they buy it for $130,000? If we bought it today and a month, 2 months later, we went with, would they buy it for full price?
I don't know that.
Okay, just curious.
Yeah, I don't know that.
And it does say in the contract that they're aware that that could happen. Those drivers. Okay, mm-hmm. Moving on.
Mm-hmm. Just a general comment. I'm looking at these, and I notice that they all start with the 26, 27. Isn't there usually at least one prior year? So you can compare it to what we had been spending?
In the budget.
Yeah.
I don't
recall.
So we really don't have anything to base it on what we were doing.
We have a budget.
We'd have to compare it to.
We'd have to have a budget
number. Department budget and commission budget. It's usually my experience is that's usually been operating budget, not capital budget. That you compare it because there's a lot of new things that go into the capital because it evolves as you know from year to year, and then it's just a rolling document. If it's in there for 2027 next year, it'll likely then that will be the current year. So the prior year goes away, and either you move it up a year or you space it out over other years, or just goes away in general.
Yeah.
Okay.
This is like the Sears Christmas catalog.
Yeah.
If we have the money, we'll buy it. If we don't, it'll be next year. Any other questions? Josh?
Yeah. Sarah was first.
Oh, Sarah, go ahead.
Again, Dennis. Is there anything that has been listed under a different department that you feel like abuts with land use and development resources that maybe hasn't been run by you or that you feel like would be outside of the scope of what the department would be able to handle or not handle, devote resources to, I should say.
I don't think I looked at it in that level of detail to think about it, to be honest with you.
Okay.
My involvement was providing numbers related to our department and what we are responsible for, pass it along to the mayor and finance, they assemble it all. Be honest with you, there hasn't been an opportunity to sit down and go through it all in detail.
Okay. Since this is your first budget season with the town, so you may not know the answer to this, but is there coordination between the departments to ensure that resources are allocated if they do overlap with other departments?
I know that when I put together my budget for the operating budget as well as for the CIP, I sat down with the mayor in finance for an hour or so, went through mine, and they did the same thing with each department.
Okay.
And looked at them holistically, and then, you know, worked through the priorities with each individual. That's my understanding. That's all the type of questions that were asked of me. Looking at how, I guess, looking at the bottom line decisions were made.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, some of the zoning and plan of conservation items we were looking at doing in the operating budget. We then moved it into the capital budget. And the mayor approached me, is it okay? Would it work if we expand it over 2 year period rather than having it all in 1 year period? And I said, yes, there's plenty of work that needs to be done that probably makes sense schedule-wise as well. So
the reason I ask is because in our capacity as planning and zoning commissioners, obviously, we're asked to send a favorable report or not, and I don't want to send a favorable report if there are items that you feel would negatively impact the department because you were not properly consulted.
No, I don't. I think that this, with all of the work that has been happening with the Revive and Renew, what has been coming to the forefront from that effort and what we've been talking about here, I think our needs to help guide the town, what we need to help guide the town, the development, as well as meeting the community needs for creating a place that's vibrant for the community, and to get the ball rolling to do that. This, I think, is a very positive approach to the doing.
Thank you.
Very good. Josh?
Field 7, drainage improvements. What is Field 7? The soccer field where they football practice one?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. They're allocating $225,000 for that?
Some of these, my belief on the Parks and Recs items, they submitted for a CIF grant. There was about a dozen or so projects that they identified. Kyle prepared preliminary plans and did preliminary cost estimates for all of them to support that grant. We were awarded one of them. So the items that are listed here, I'm sure, are based upon what CLA had put together from a cost standpoint.
The splash pad.
I can't speak to a splash pad. I'm sorry.
Flip and slide, that'd be good enough.
What is it?
Kids. Joe, any questions, comments? Mark? Nikki?
So for the record, I will say the Board of Ed approved unanimously to use our 2% fund, which was $724,000. We spent $660,000 of that on capital improvements, reducing our capital request by $1 million, which also included deciding not to use to replace the fuel tank at the bus garage and instead fill it in for $32,000 versus replace it at $368,000. So we reduced our budget by $1 million for capital.
Keep up the good work.
Okay. Keep it going, Wilson.
All right. I'll entertain a motion to send a favorable report to the Town Council on the 2026-2027 Capital Improvement Plan.
So moved.
Who is that?
Commissioner
Joe?
Summers.
Okay. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
Okay. Motion and a second. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Anyone oppose? Anyone abstain? Okay. Move forward. Agenda item 11, Land Use Director Report. Dennis.
Okay, Dennis.
First, I'd like to report, in case you haven't noticed, we have a new addition at the table.
Yeah, we've got friends. Yeah, I've never heard before.
So, Catherine Rose joined us last Monday. Right, last one. So she came back for week two, which is good.
Yay. That's an improvement.
Wow. She hasn't learned yet.
First of the month is Friday. You're going to do good.
Oh, bright eye, Bush.
And Catherine has experience at the table doing work like this. She has worked with a number of boards in Norwich as well for meeting minutes and has already proved to be a great addition. Fitting in well with all of us and jumping in.
So, welcome aboard.
We're going
welcome.
Easy so we don't scare her away.
All right.
We'll try.
We'll overwhelm her in a little while. Item A, amendments, July 1, 2026, Housing Bill 80002. You might all be getting tired of hearing about this, so we're getting to the end. At the last meeting, I don't know if anybody brought your book with you, but passed out the book that was half. You don't necessarily need it. I covered everything that I wanted to cover in the tabs. In the latest package, there was this summary of draft text amendments with a revision date of April 23rd. It was just provided just to make sure that you had it again in hand tonight. We reviewed all of these. The biggest changes here are related to housing-related terms, density, the fact that housing needs to be as of right when you're a transit community middle housing and you have 29 units. Town doesn't have much of an issue with that because a lot of things are as of right in the town already. A lot of communities out there have been scrambling and are having a difficult time because they are so pro special permit, which is contrary to where the town is here, which is great. We talked about, and in your packet, and I passed out beforehand an update. Usually there's a table with a couple of other additions. I want to talk about that table in a moment. First, to start off, so this is a color-coded to explain what types of residential uses are permitted by a special permit or permitted as a right or prohibited completely. The types of dwelling units are listed on the left-hand side. Each of these have been defined. We went through all of those definitions. We had went through cluster development, senior housing, active adult for some of the larger lot zoning districts, like the 160, the open space, the R120, 80, and 40. From there, when we reviewed them, we had added special permits for senior housing and active adult. We talked about that as something not to be just permitted, but because it is a lower density, larger lot type district, we had advised you to consider these types of uses to be special permits. They are allowed by special permit in the R80, 120, and the 160 zone. You had concurred. So I had updated the table accordingly. Manufactured home parks, and we'll talk about this in more detail. This next item is to talk about the possibility of a moratorium. But manufactured home parks are currently not permitted in the R80. It was kind of like, almost like it was skipped over. They were allowed in the 120, they were allowed in the 40, but they're not allowed in the R80. So I believe we talked about putting it in there. I put it in there as a special permit because they are allowed as a special permit in the other districts. One item that we didn't talk about, I'd like you to consider, is allowing cluster developments in the open space district as a special permit. And I haven't talked to my colleagues about that as well, but but you know, to me, the purpose of the open space is to preserve open space, right? Mm-hmm. So to subdivide it, the whole purpose of a cluster subdivision is to preserve open space in smaller lots. So it seems like something that would be appropriate to be there. So I throw that out. I don't know if anybody has any reaction. Makes sense?
Makes sense.
Moving to the right side of the table under density, into the gray shaded area, we have the densities for each of the unit type based upon where the unit is allowed. And for Ms. Lundy's benefit, you'll see on the dwelling unit types, there's terms such as cottage cluster, triplex, quadplex, perfect six, live work unit. It might look a little different to you. Mm-hmm. These are part of the housing bill that was passed and that is, you know, comes effective on July 1. So we've defined all of these, and by the statute, you know, it has how many number of units. So this is equating to this. So, for instance, a triplex is a three units in a building, so we picked six units per acre as the density because you then would be two buildings. You know, seven or eight units per acre wouldn't make any fractional sense, right?
Right.
So that's where some of these came in from. And we rounded up multifamily, which we're now calling attached single-family flats, which is your typical apartment-type building, traditional apartment-type building. We were allowing 18 units per acre. We rounded up to 20 units per acre. It was more of a round number. That hadn't changed from prior. What I had proposed, and it appeared everybody was had agreed in the concept, but I'm backing down from it for discussion tonight, is to have a required set-aside, and that is every housing development at a certain threshold must have a set-aside of affordable housing units. Working with BJH advisors as part of their scope, they have to develop a pro forma for development of sites to identify how the costs for development based upon the return of the based on the market for what they can get for rents, both on the commercial retail side of rents and housing, and then what that equates to for costs for development, construction, et cetera. And how things are turning out, it's penciling out pretty challenging. What I had presented before, the tiered approach, which it had included not just 80% AMI, but 65% AMI, and then the tiered of 10% and I think 25%, depending on how many units, that was consistent with CHAFA, and that would work with subsidies from sources such as CHAFA or other entities, but not every housing development that will come to town is going to be subsidized. So talking with them, I also got Goldman and York's opinion about it as well. They concurred, and we felt that if we wanted to go with a required set-aside, a threshold of 20, anything over 20 units, and having a requirement of a minimum set aside of 10% of the units, and only for those earning 80% AMI. So, anything up to 20 units, you would not be required to have a set aside or a deed restriction. But over 20 units, 10% of those would need to be deed restricted.
Is 80% AMI standard for?
Yeah, the 830G uses 80% and 65%.
Okay.
So it's 15% of 80% and 15% set aside for 65%.
Okay. Thank you.
So I want to make sure I understand. Up to 20 units, you're saying no longer 80% AMI?
Up to 20 units, it's just market rate. There's no requirement for deed restriction.
And that's how to our advantage?
It's,
I heard you. I want to make sure I understood what you said.
So that would give more flexibility for developers pro forma to pencil out in the positive. Because if they don't have subsidies, if we require too much of a set aside, it would require some sort of a subsidy.
And those values align, like you said, with Connecticut.
The prior numbers that I had before you aligned
right.
with CHAFA.
You support that?
I supported it. But only if it was being, but now what I'm being told, if it's subsidized, they would likely work out. And then there, it's still borderline of it being profitable for the developer. We're still obtaining a set aside to meet our 830G requirement, our 10% requirement. But it's being a little bit more conservative for the developer, but we're not turning away development.
Does the state subsidize?
What's that?
The state subsidizes them? Who subsidizes them?
Nobody. This would require them whether they're subsidized or not.
But who would, if they were subsidized, who would subsidize them?
Subsidies, I guess, would mean anything from historic tax credits to CHAFA funding to community investment funds.
Anything, okay.
Anything that gives them money that they don't have to generate themselves.
Question. On your colored chart, the last item, manufactured home park. My question comes from your use of the word park. That is like a several homes on one lot or something like that.
That's what we use right now, like Hillcrest. Like
Hillcrest. Yes.
Oh, all right. Okay, so I'm trying to draw in my mind a distinction between a manufactured home and a prefabricated home.
Manufactured homes are certified and regulated by HUD. They come on a fixed chassis.
Yeah.
Whereas modular homes and things like that, they come on a chassis, but they're picked off the chassis and set on.
Right. On a trailer.
Right. And my question is, I don't see that kind of a distinction here.
There is no modular homes are single-family dwellings, two-family dwellings. They can be multifamily dwellings. It's just that manufactured homes are very specific, and they're regulated by federal regulations.
Okay. All right. And does that affect anything that you have in here? That difference? Being come with, you know, with the chassis attached or lifted off the chassis?
No, only that if the chassis is attached, then it's a mobile home park.
Yeah,
that's the only thing. If it's a modular, then it could be a single family home.
Mm-hmm.
It could be, I guess, I suppose a duplex could be made as a modular fashion.
Yeah.
Because
it's
assembled, it's manufactured somewhere else, it's brought into site and then assembled.
Well, those are built under the bulk code, right, Joe? Or the
you're going to start seeing more modular construction. An example of a modular construction of a commercial is on 184 in Groton, down the hill from Walmart on the right-hand side behind the Chinese restaurant. Those office buildings, those were all modular components brought in, set.
Okay, and your use of the word park here. I think you're also going to see more and more prefabricated homes on single-family lots.
Yeah.
Not just in a park. And that's the distinction I was trying to draw. Yeah.
The build them right in the factories. You know, big like an airport terminal like that thing, and they just build the house there, and then they pack it up and put them there. If you want a ranch, you want a any type of thing, and they just pack it.
Yeah, somebody buys a piece of land, 2-3 acres, and they put a pre-manufactured home on that. That's not a park.
No, but we'd have to allow it.
Okay.
Because it's a single family dwelling.
It's a single family dwelling.
Okay.
I'm the 10%. Montville is already an affordable community. The rents aren't extremely high. I feel comfortable that that a developer could get that to work in their pro forma. If that's the direction that you're comfortable going, or if you want to strike that in its entirety, we don't require it right now. We don't have to require it. At some point, we probably will need to require it, because when we get the numbers from the state and they tell every town what your new affordable housing threshold is, we're probably going to be coming down to having to mandate something like this anyways. Mm-hmm. That's my gut. I could be wrong. And so we could table it and let that be something that we flush out during our housing plan development, too. So.
I'm in favor. Or we could amend it.
Or we can amend it. Exactly. Ms. Lundy said she's in favor of it.
Mm-hmm.
Moving forward with it. So, anybody else have thoughts on this?
I'm thinking.
I mean, we have a builder at the table.
Yeah, that's my forte.
Knows more than
all of us.
That was my point. It's confusing.
So, for example, Dennis, if we go to townhouses, right? Someone comes in with their apartment complex, townhouses greater than 20 units. The project next to the Polish Club, across from the Polish Club. Maybe that's not a good one to point out at this time. But how many units was that approved?
87.
87 units.
Right.
So under this, moving forward, 10% of those?
You'd have to do 9 units.
9 units. Okay.
Mm-hmm. If you have 21 units in your development, you'd have to do 3 of them. If you always round up. Okay.
I'm just trying to picture that in my head. If it's starts tipping the scale to where it works or doesn't work. Or.
I mean, that seems very modest, 9 out of 87. Seems like a very low number.
I think it's a high number.
Yeah, I'm
okay,
being,
no.
No, but I'm being conservative, too, because I don't want to put the town in a position where it's scaring away, you know, a developer if we have these higher numbers. And they just say we just can't get this to work, or the it can work, but it's either break even or just above, and their profit margin isn't where it used to be for them.
Yeah,
you know, there's also that aspect of it too. Mm-hmm. You know, so I just don't want to.
And I think I'm just going to point it out, and again, this we're seeing a lot of things not getting built as it is that seem to have
a
multitude of units. There's a couple of subdivisions or one for sure that keeps coming up, was approved up on Gay Hill, right?
Mm-hmm.
24 lots.
Monahan.
Yep, right. Okay. So there's 24 lots there. 10% of that would be
three
houses you'd be doing as affordable, right?
Yeah, and then single family.
But it wouldn't apply to
a traditional subdivision would not, no.
Okay. All right.
Nor a cluster.
Do you have any insight into what similar towns are requiring?
Not many of them do. I know, like, Stamford requires 10%, but not many of them do. I was trying to find that. I got sidetracked with something else.
I think South Windsor does.
Do
they mandate.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I can look into it.
I have one more question, and because I'm very thick about things. All right, so this manufactured home park, so if a mobile home park comes in, is that considered manufactured?
Same thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're talking about the same thing. Mm-hmm. So can this commission put a moratorium on mobile homes?
Yes.
Like, can we say we don't really want any for the next 5 years?
Maybe not for
or
5 years.
Or whatever.
But I did, and it's in your packet, I did draft a moratorium for discussion. And I ran it by the attorney, and he felt very comfortable that we would we have the grounds for it. We're putting on a 1-year moratorium.
1 year, okay.
And then evaluating it further after that 1 year, leading up to that 1 year, evaluating it further. If you look at I'll pull it up, but. And the moratorium talks about how we have to develop a housing plan. We're studying housing. We're studying our zoning. And we need time to understand the implications of where the housing needs of the region and the state are going and how that fits in with our vision here in the town. If somebody comes in and wants to do an 830G application and that it includes mobile homes, moratorium would not
affect that.
Yeah.
Okay.
The moratorium doesn't stop that.
And when do you see us voting on that? Next month?
Starting on the moratorium?
Oh.
I haven't talked with you about it until just now.
I'm like, let's vote on it.
And we could extend the moratorium if we needed to?
I believe we might be able to. I think it all depends on where we stand with our evaluation.
You just don't want to vote with something where there's still a loose end.
I'm sorry?
I just don't want to have to vote on something where there's still a loose end.
Yes, understood. Any other questions on the table? I mean, I guess on the 10%, are we comfortable that we'd want to go that route, or?
I've got one question. You remember that you call it on Fitchell Road, the Chikovic Trailer Park that was defunct, there was somebody living in a trailer there. He said, well, we had it till the summer and all that. Since it's now abandoned trail park, is it null and void no more?
No,
so nobody, no more trails there. So much for that.
Unless they came back in with a new application
Yeah. Well, but that thing went under foreclosure, didn't it?
I believe so, but
yeah.
I'd like to see 5%.
For trailers?
No, not trailers. We're on two different topics here, John. On the affordable. You know, you mentioned what you have here or nix it, and I would prefer to not nix it, but I was wondering if we start off just a little easier than that. Any thoughts?
What are we at right now? To the 10%.
Well, overall, we're almost, I think we're close to 6%.
Yeah, 6 something, right?
None of them are deed restricted, and they're all, majority of them are mortgages. Mm-hmm. I forgot what are the different thresholds, but the requirements, but not, we have zero deed restricted.
But right now, we're at about the 6%
yeah.
mark.
Yeah, and we could go into an 830G moratorium. What kind of threshold? If you increase it by 2% from the last decennial census, or if you get so many points based upon approved affordable units, but they may not be built. Mm-hmm. But I don't think we're anywhere near that. We're nowhere near either one of them. Our if I remember correctly, our rate went up a little bit in the percentage, and then went down. Dip down again.
Because as the mortgages, if somebody refinanced one, it went to 2%, they possibly.
Mm-hmm. I don't envy what you got to do. You have a very tight road there. Town doesn't build these buildings, and contractors do, and they need to make a profit.
Oh, yeah.
So that's a very delicate balance.
Or they have to cut corners.
Or they won't come in. So I don't envy you.
How about on the set aside percentage? If we do a tiered 5% up to 50 units, over 50 units is 10%.
Well, we just talked about 87 units, and it wasn't well received at 9. So 10% would be, right, 5.
Well, no, your first 50 would be at 5%.
First 50 would be 5.
Yeah.
First 50
yeah,
would be at 5%.
You have to distinguish that. First five, the first,
right.
The first
if you come in for 87, you get nailed for 10%, right? But I just think it would be to try it.
I know.
No, but who knows where the state's going to push us down the road, right? They may end up mandating it, you know. Is this Russia? I mean,
once you meet 10%, though,
we'll find out after next week when
too.
The session ends.
Right?
So if we started more conservatively, we could see if there's a cooling effect on the
yeah. What if we did something like that, 5% up to 50 units?
I think you can.
10% over that.
And then
the
units over 50.
And I want to make sure I'm clear that the 10% we're talking about is the number of units in a new development to get us – which will help us to get to the state-mandated 10% of our overall housing stock.
Right.
So it's an internal goal to reach the state goal.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah.
But Commissioner Terry just made a good point. When we hit 10%, can we put a moratorium on it?
We can. When we hit like 8%, we can put a moratorium on
830G
applications.
I think when you hit your 10%.
But once you hit your 10%, you're exempt
right.
from the 830G.
Can't
you're exempt from 830G.
Yeah.
Oh, that's nice to know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Until the next
know that.
If you hit the 10%, correct?
Perhaps. You know,
yeah.
So okay. Maybe you want to go to 11% right now.
Yeah. If you hit the 10%,
you're exempt from 830.
Someone can't come in and use 830. Right.
But that 10% is on occupied units, not ones that are approved.
Right.
Occupied.
They have to be built.
Or built.
Yep.
So even though we have the inventory that's not occupied, it doesn't count.
So we may have approvals, say... We have approvals and we're at 11%. By the state, we're still at 6 because they're not built yet. Once they're built and CO'd, then those numbers go up.
Don't have to have a body in it.
No, you don't have to have a body. Okay.
Yeah. And then with some of the new laws, too, I think there's methods of it now, but with the new housing bill, there's more flexibility. Or I guess it would be more generous for the town to get their qualifying points or credits of unbuilt units but approved, and you can, for every five approved unit, you get 1 point, and that can help. And you get so many points, then you can get ask for a moratorium from 830G, even though you don't hit your 10%. You're getting so many points, you can ask and file a request with the Secretary of Housing, requesting that moratorium.
Catherine, that'll be your job to keep track of that scorecard.
Yeah, the whole point of the 10, requiring a set aside is to help us to get to that 10%.
Yeah. Does that, to the commission, sound reasonable?
Yes.
5% up to
50.
Sorry. Up to 50, over 50 unit numbers over 50.
So if you have 100, the first 50 are at 5%.
Correct.
Oh, correct.
10%.
There you go.
Okay.
Lisa?
It's fine.
Good. Better than nothing.
Yeah, no, we need something. We have nothing now.
We start to have people coming in and they're not blinking an eye at it, and then you might say, well, maybe we should do
10
or we have the option.
15.
We can always we can always go up.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
So, all right.
I don't want to move away from the table. I want to talk about the overlay zone in housing. Okay? So, our overlay zone intent is to be very flexible, very generous, allow any commercial use that is allowed in the town of Montville to go anywhere as long as it's within the overlay zone. So even if the underlying zone is an R120 and the R120 on the other side of town doesn't allow a certain commercial use, if it's in the overlay, you're allowed to do that commercial use. Mm. In the overlay, you're allowed to do multifamily anywhere as well, regardless of the underlying zone. One of the challenges that we face is that I'm going to pick on the R120 and the R20. Okay, R20 allows multifamily housing at 4 units per acre. R120 does not allow multifamily housing. But the OZ says you can do multifamily housing anywhere in the OZ, and if the underlying zones are 120, you can do multifamily. Mm-hmm. But there's no guidance on density.
Mm.
Okay, so what has happened is the developer proposes any density they want. Okay, but if they're going in on an R20 and the density says 4 units per acre, they're limited to 4 units per acre. So in some respects, it's not even really an overlay zone because they can still do multifamily in the R20 even if it didn't have the overlay zone. There's a couple of proposals that I have in my head, but right now for this first initial amendment, I'd like to suggest that if a dwelling type is not allowed in the underlying zone, it would still be permitted in the OZ, but the density would be capped at the next lowest density. So for instance, if you are in an R120 zone, okay, and you want to do townhomes within the overlay district, it's not allowed in the underlying zone, but you would have to go to the R40, which would be the next least dense district, and it would be allowed, as a permit and not as a special permit like we'd have it listed here, okay? But if you are in the R20 and you want to do townhomes, it's permitted and there's a defined density, so you'd follow that density, okay? So at least there's some control and we document something consistent, because when what happens if it's not there and we're all trying to sit around a table with a prospective developer and explain this, they say, no, but it doesn't say that, so we can do whatever we want. So it just becomes very uncomfortable for everybody. So I would like to propose that we take that approach now. I do have a proposal, like I said, that I'll talk about in a moment moving forward on the OZ. But that's how I'd like to suggest that we address density for the OZ zone. But we allow everything permitted as of right, no special permit. And that's how we've handled it currently.
And one example of how not having density, 245 Route 32 that you just approved tonight, mm-hmm. it's a little over an acre, 22 mm-hmm. units, because that they use the OZ zone and the underlying zone is commercial. So mm-hmm. there's no density to go by. They also did a project at 145 Route 32 /18 Powerhouse,
yep.
about the same size parcel. There's a density because the underlying zone was R20. They could only get 11 units there. So same size parcels, but a big difference in units.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
And while we were talking tonight about how tight that site is, that's why.
Hmm.
Yeah. Oh, what's right?
Just to kind of put it.
No, that was good. That was good.
Context.
Yeah, I like that.
Does that sound reasonable?
Yes.
Yep.
Enough on the table. I'm good there. Unless anybody has any questions. I want to talk a little bit about commercial uses now. Says he's ready to go to 11 o'clock. I'll talk slow.
Don't worry about it.
I can only give you 10:30 as we post it. Oh, no, we can. We can go to 11.
We can't start new stuff. That's right.
We can't start anything new
at 10:30.
No, we can't come past 9.
Yes.
Commercial uses, and this has to do with the phrase in our C1 and in our C2 district. So under permitted uses in both of those districts, we say activities involving the sale of goods or services carried out for profit. Very broad. We did talk with our attorney about it. He said that that's illegal because you can't be specific about profit. And then also, would have happened something like the Goodwill comes in or a nonprofit organization, they're not for profit, right? So then theoretically, if you read this literally, then they wouldn't be allowed to some extent. I mean, there's businesses and professional offices, but what we find is that some people come in and take that literally to mean they can do anything under the sun. Since I've started here, what we've been telling them is that, no, you can do what you want to do as long as it's a commercial use, because this is a commercial district. It's not an industrial district, but it's a commercial district.
How about a bar room?
I'm sorry?
How about a bar room?
A bar room?
Bar room, you know, liquor, you know. You know, a bar room.
A bar?
A tavern.
Yeah, I guess would fall under it. I don't know if we have a listed here for, well, we have restaurants, right? So that would probably fall under that, and it says food or beverage. So so what we'd like to suggest is defining what a commercial use is. In that packet that I handed out tonight before you came in, it was on the top. There are some uses that we would like to include in our definitions. Partly we define commercial as a use facilitating the barter, sale, or exchange of things of value, which is, again, pretty open. I've included a definition here that is more generally utilized in land use. Still is broad, but an establishment involving the exchange of goods or services directly to the end customer or patron includes such uses as retail, office, personal service establishments, professional services, and hospitality. Excludes parking areas and interior or exterior storage as principal uses. and no infrastructure. It helped distinguish that from an industrial type use. There's two industrial use definitions. We have none currently at the moment. And because we have two industrial zones, I'm suggesting an industrial use, which is kind of a heavy industrial, which is manufacturing, fabrication, wholesale, chemical processing, earth processing, construction equipment storage, textiles, it goes on, pretty intense potential for noise, nuisance, environmental. Those are usually in the heavy industrial. And then light industrial, here predominantly conducted within a building and require distribution and receiving of good products that consist of less than 20 trips per day. So there's, you know, considering how many trips or how many vehicles would be coming in and out of a site. And that's not employees, that would be shipments. And generally, light industrial includes technology labs, printing or publishing, furniture production, arts, light assembly, where things are created off premises and then assembled there on site, warehousing and storage of less than 10,000 square feet. Allows offices and allows infrastructure. We have other uses that were proposed for defining that we don't currently have, such as what is a mixed use. And a mixed use is any, you know, just two or more units or two or more types of uses on a site. Professional services, which corresponds with a commercial use, are establishments which provide services such as accounting, medical, legal, engineering, design, real estate, or architecture, generally consulting. Personal service establishments, then we go on for retail and defining large retail, small retail. We're proposing the commercial use definition alongside the industrial and the light industrial definitions to help give guidance as to what the commercial means. And then I need to find, and then also on the page after those definitions, you'll see a revision to the C2 district. And instead of saying activities involving the sale of goods or services carried out for profit, just say commercial uses as defined by these regulations.
May I ask why in the purpose we're capitalizing nouns that are not proper?
What I'm trying to do in our new regulations is every term that has a definition is capitalized.
That gets tricky when you're rewriting, though, as a regulation person. I generally try to go the opposite way. Don't capitalize what's not a proper noun. Just something to consider.
Well, I think you did a pretty good job. I think I picked them all up in
okay.
there.
Okay. So. You own it? Yes. It's just a stylistic preference?
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of times defined terms are italicized.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just get to a point where almost everything is capitalized, and that could be...
And then you get to a point where almost everything is defined.
True.
It sounds like your mom's like, we need a definition for that. We need a definition for this. Mm-hmm. But I understand where you're mm-hmm. going. So any thoughts on making that change?
Question. Why are we distinguishing large retail, small retail?
I get carried away.
There's no difference.
Yeah, no, well, it, as of now, there isn't, but maybe in the future, if we decide we don't want to have a large retailer in a certain type of zoning district, then you say small retail.
Like your C1's kind of villagey.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I guess to piggyback on that, where did you come up with the 25,000 square feet since the question's been asked?
It's somewhat arbitrary. To be honest with you, and now that you bring it up, we probably should strike it because it has no place in this regulation anyways, because we don't distinguish anywhere where there's small and where there's large. So
okay,
I should probably strike that.
Maybe just keep them in your back pocket in the event that we do need them.
Yeah.
What about extra. Right? Yeah. Personal service establishment, same thing. Or is there actually a need for that distinguishment?
I think it was just helping to describe commercial uses in general. Give more definition to it. Lock it down a little bit more.
On the industrial, light industrial.
Yep.
Historically, those were separated in town based on the availability of sewer. Like Route 85, the Lombardi Park, the Cobaluck operation, that was all zoned light industrial because of the lack of sewer. And I think back when the regs were originally written, people thought of industrial as they were going to capture more processing plants and chemical plants and paper mills and stuff like that. So I guess my question is, really, that doesn't, you know, I'm reading the definitions here, and industrial is junkyard, scrapyard, processing, gravel, stone. Actually, a lot of that's being done in our light industrial right now. And you know, the next topic, you know, we don't have all that much available extra sewer treatment capacity and all these things. So do we need to have a light and a heavy? Do you think we're ever going to be in a situation where we have to?
We talked a couple of meetings ago about needing more industrial land.
Right. Which I think we do.
And why I picked industrial versus light industrial is because we have those two zones, and the purpose of each one is completely different, where the light industrial is uses that are compatible with residential uses, right? And I don't know how.
Yeah.
So I was trying to find that balance of where it is, and we may find going through the new regulations that we have to do something totally different. I don't know. You know, that might be something Goldman New York can.
Yeah, that's the only thing that, you know, when I was looking, you know, what we've been calling light industrial for years was, you know, everything along the 163 corridor, it was industrial because it had sewer.
Yeah. Well, in the light industrial, while we're on that topic, is another item on my list that I wanted to bring up is, because of the purpose of light industrial stating, you know, being compatible with, and I'm paraphrasing, with residential uses, I'm saying to myself, we allow earth processing, bituminous concrete plants, which are, you know, generally noisier operations, and not necessarily compatible with residential uses. And I was going to suggest, well, maybe we want to move those into a special permit in that zone, not exclude them, but allow them by a special permit so you have more discretion. I don't know how the commission feels here. Maybe we don't even want to bother making any of these changes right now. We can evaluate this, you know, a little bit further. These are just some items that we're jumping out of.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm just trying to picture it in my head while it. Yeah.
And we could scratch the light industrial. We can maybe combine, do a hybrid of the two, and just call it industrial, just to help distinguish between industrial and commercial.
Right. And I don't think we should tie it to availability of sewer or public water.
Yeah.
It should be to any land in that zone we choose, because if somebody wants to come in and do an industrial establishment, if they can prove they can get a state-approved septic system, community well, whatever the case may be, let them be.
Right.
Let them pay for it.
Right, that's how kind of how it played out. If you were doing something that big, you were going to need fire protection. And if, mm-hmm.
yeah.
you know, you're either going to put in a million-gallon tank or you're going to connect the municipal water if you were that big. So,
And if you're that big and you can get it to work and you can meet the building codes, then you should be able to do it, right?
Yes.
So, but if you can't get it to work and you can't meet the building codes, then you can't do it. It's self-regulating.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. It works itself out.
And if you get something that's so controversial, noise-making, like you say, maybe those do go under a special permit.
So am I hearing, like, just table all of that for now, and just we'll bring that up, or...
Continue to come up with a little bit of refining of that.
Yeah. But I'd like to move with the commercial and the industrial. I can combine.
Well, I think you're right. We need to make that separation. So, and again, the renewed revitalization of 153 and 32, some of the existing businesses along there that really not are going to be within harmony of new residential buildings, auto body shops. I'm just not picking on anyone, but picking different things like that. Truck repairs.
You brought up
that stuff should be in an industrial zone. Yes.
Yes. When you say the word auto, the next item I wanted to bring up, and we've been talking about this, is gasoline and convenience stores. There's a lot of them, especially on the north end of Route 32. I know Cumberland Farms is, not, it almost feels like it's Montville. It's not in Montville, but I mean, it's still right there. We were just wondering if the commission had any feelings on whether we want any more in our C1s, or, well, I don't know if we have any in our C1s. We allow it by special permit in our C1s, but we allow it as of right in our C2s. But there's a fair number of them. Again, that's something we could table until we really tackle the uses in the future. But
can we go back to light industrial? Is 10,000 square foot another arbitrary number?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. In mixed use development. Well, while we're on the topic, I think that was another intent of the OZ. So 32, which was historically commercial, maybe go back far enough, a lot of it was still residential.
Yep.
But I think that was another purpose of the Oz zone, was to be able to offer a mixed use in that.
Yep. No, and I wouldn't suggest not having it otherwise.
Okay.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think for this revision related to, I'm calling it that, the housing amendments, but making the distinct, clarifying the density on the residential side. There might be a couple of little tweaks in the language of that district, but not changing it substantially. And in your packet that was emailed out, and that's in here before you tonight too, there is a proposal for enhancing the OZ zone and even providing more flexibility. And if you, I could jump into that now, because I think I've covered everything on the first amendment that I'd like to bring to hearing that we've talked about setting a schedule for. We can talk about that in a moment. But one thought that I had on the OZ zone is to keep the spirit of what we have in place, allowing a lot of flexibility, but taking it one step further, because currently we revert back to the underlying zoning district's bulk standards, so setbacks, building height, et cetera. You have to follow that to do any type of commercial development. I'm just going to start, I'll start with commercial and do it as of right. Still keep that, but providing another layer of flexibility that if somebody comes in and maybe they have a unique type development that they want to do, but they need to, they can't do it on a piece of land or parcels of land that they want to combine, or it's a really creative idea and they just need a lot more flexibility, allow them to throw out the bulk standards, create their own bulk standards. Again, building height, we don't do coverage, but building height, setbacks, and do that under a special permit, and it would be through a master plan review, and the special permit would be preliminary plan review only by this commission. So they're not required to do all the full detailed engineering up front with a risk of getting denied. but I'll say maybe bring it to like 30% level of completion, to a reasonable certainty that we all agree, staff agrees with them that, you know, yes, this looks like it will work, and then you get your approval. Once you get your approval from the commission, then your final approvals and all your detailed engineering is done and reviewed by staff only. You never come back to the commission. Similarly, do the same thing for housing in mixed use. If a housing development wants to come in and they want to do, you know, an alternative density, a higher density, allow them to do that under the special permit process, master plan review process. Again, they want to deviate from master plan, from bulk standards, they will be able to do that as well. But that would be done under the master plan special permit. Currently, in the overlay, they can't do that unless they would get they can't deviate from bulk standards unless they get a variance.
Right.
Okay. This wouldn't have to worry about going to ZBA. It's all dealt with here. And actually, you have a process like this already in your regulations. The housing opportunity district is written that way. So it's basically following that same process, but it could be applied anywhere in the overlay district. And I have a rough draft of it in the packet. Our council is looking at it as well. So I wanted to see and get a reaction from the commission before we, you know, move a little bit further in advancing that idea. But if you were amenable to the concept, then we can move forward with it in more detail.
So if you throw out the bulk standards now, it's opinion based.
And that's where the special permit comes in.
I know, but I think, this is me speaking.
Yeah.
I think you have to be very careful with that, because now you're setting precedences every individual time with that special permit. And while you gave so-and-so a different opinion than me, that's the word I'm going to use right now. Opinion. Yeah. I think the concept's a good idea. I worry about our consistency in issuing special permits when someone comes in and they want to throw out the bulk, three or four different people, and now we have to make an opinion decision.
You don't, under a special permit, you don't have to be consistent. I mean, there might be a unique circumstance from one project to another that it just doesn't feel right, then you have the legislative right to deny that application.
I do understand that, but in the spirit, as you'd say, which I agree with wholeheartedly, of welcoming developers to the community, I think we'd have to be pretty careful with this.
Understood.
That's my mind and my thought on that.
Moving forward, how do you propose handling a commercial establishment that is specifically intended to service a residential area? Something like a small grocery market or something like
that.
If someone wants to have an establishment like that depends upon the residential area around it, how do you propose in including something like that, like a convenience store?
Like Oakdale Market.
Oakdale
Market. Just like that.
Well, I mean, if it's in a zoning district that is allowed, then they could do it. I mean, if they want to put it in a zoning district that it's not allowed, they can't do it. I mean, and they can't. You a use variance is not something you legally can get. If it's in the overlay zone, then it can go anywhere it wants because it would be considered a commercial use. But if it's outside of the overlay zone, then it would have to go with a district that it would be allowed. Now, there could be a floating zone mechanism, similar to what we just described for the overlay zone. There could be a floating zone, like a planned development district, PDD, that you can set certain criteria. And that floating zone can land on a parcel or parcels anywhere in the town or whatever parameters that you put down to it, and it gets plopped down by a similar approval and review process as I described with the master plan. That's a two-step process in that you would be doing a zone change. So it would be a PDD-1 if it's the first one, a PDD-2. And then that PDD is establishing its own design guidelines and parameters and uses within that zone. That could be something, if you have something specific in mind, that could be something that that could be. And I think the HOD was supposed to be like that, but it never said where it could go. You know, that was always right. The confusing part to us, is it just never said where it could go. Could it go in the floating zone? Could it only go in R40s? Was there a minimum? I think there was a minimum lot size, but, or was the intent it could go anywhere in the town? It just never said one way or the other.
Right.
Yeah, so. Waterford has PDD, and we used it there when I was there. A lot of towns have something similar to that type of a floating zone. And it's not uncommon for developers to propose it for their specific project, and it's never used again in the town's life.
Which I think the HOD
probably was supposed to be
done for that, and then right. Project.
So if you like the concept, I can keep vetting it out a little bit more and bring it out, bring it back to you.
I like the concept of that, and I think it gets more clarity than just the overlay
zone. More clarity and gives a lot more flexibility.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, even under the current zone, an applicant has to develop all the plans. You know, here they only have to develop them to a certain level, even less than what they would have to develop under the current way we do it to get that approval, and then everything else is just done administratively with staff. So. Okay. All right, I'll continue working on that. Moratorium. In your regulation or in your packet, there was a recommendation for a moratorium on mobile home parks. Is that something that we already started touching upon it? Is that something that you're interested in?
Got to find it first.
Yeah, I got to find it myself.
What was the impetus for this?
I think we started talking at the last commission meeting a lot about mobile home parks. I think there was concerns about where they should be, shouldn't be. And then the chairman and I were also talking about it after that meeting. And I think I came up with the idea that if we don't know what we want to do with it, and we're going to be studying housing in the town, it might be appropriate to do a moratorium so we have time to evaluate it. I mean, it's not unheard of for towns to not even allow single-family one-acre lots because they're trying to figure out what they want to do with their zoning, too. So,
well, and part of it was we were discussing how zoning got adopted in Mont.
That's true, yeah.
And one of the biggest pet peeves, you know, at the time was trailer parks.
Yeah, I know, it's a lot of trucking ones.
Again, it would be interesting, I think, because I need visual. We took a map of Montville and we color-coded the trailer parks.
Yeah.
Open space, the reservoirs, the environmental set aside areas, and see what we have left.
And when we do our housing plan, we have to do that. We have to identify our growth areas, our buildable areas in town. So, and
then we can really see where the overlay zones even want to apply them or allow them to be applied, right?
So I
would like to pursue that.
On here, I had outlined the purpose and intent. The four supporting reasons is to complete our housing plan, the first one, first bullet. The second one is, maybe shouldn't say finalize, but to advance the POCD. We can leave finalize, but to finalize the POCD. Incorporate the revive and renew recommendations, and then how everything influences the need and appropriateness, the use of mobile home parks. For a one-year period, the effective date I threw in July 1, it probably would be later than that, but. And there is, in the back of that, you should see the opinion from our attorney, Michael Carey, on this. But I think with this and the other amendments that we talked about, not the OZ zone, but these two, with you have to refer them out. We have some house cleaning to do. I don't have my date, but I think it's the regular meeting in June. Yeah, so it would be the regular meeting in June of June 23rd. And then that would put everything effective July 27th. I did send an email out, by the way, asking about the 9th of June. Special meeting. Personally, I've got a lot going on. My kids are graduating from high school that week and stuff, so I don't even think I should plan on having a meeting. I think we do it at the regular meeting on the 23rd.
Okay. Right. So we want to set a public hearing for the.
No, we'll get it accepted. It'll be accepted.
At the special.
No,
we.
I think the commission doesn't even have to set
the public
hearing.
Well, it's going to be part of our.
So we'll get an application together. It'll be received at the May meeting. The referrals will have already gone out before that. And then at the May meeting, we can set the public hearing date.
Just, okay. I would just throw some caution because there is some legislation. There's one more week left. There is legislation on manufactured homes and manufactured home parks. To isolate manufactured home parts, I'm against a moratorium. Because why? Do we have a lot of applications right now? No. We do have a lot of mobile home parks, yes. But that's my feeling. I'm going to be opposed to it, to a moratorium.
On mobile homes?
On the mobile home parks.
Okay.
Agreed.
You're against it too?
Yeah.
But don't we have enough mobile homes in town?
Oh, you got that right.
I don't know how they're beneficial and how they make us look like Waterford or East Lyme. How do we ever move past? I'm not down on them. I'm not. But we have a lot of them. So many. More than most towns. And why would
which
we
is,
want more?
Which is fine. Well, look at Hillcrest. Hillcrest, that's a mobile home park. Technically,
but those are more. Mile.
That doesn't look like Williams
Road. That doesn't look like a...
That does not look like Williams Road.
Yeah, it doesn't look like Fitch Hill Road.
That's different. That looks like a manufactured home to me.
Easy.
That's
why I think we should draw a distinction between a mobile home and a manufactured home. Because then we can handle them differently.
He did already.
I just think you have to be very careful because you can start going down a discriminatory sounding route.
Exactly.
Yeah, you got some nice places and then you got some crap holes.
Well, I think maybe that is... all the more reason to have a moratorium so you have you have time to understand and think all of this through and talk it through.
But is it defensible to have it for one type of housing versus another?
Right.
Legally, you can do it, so it's defensible.
Okay.
If it's done right, fine and dandy.
I mean, I remember Bolton, I was working in the town of Bolton, they had a moratorium on single-family homes. They had it for a year, and then they put another extension for another year or something like that.
But is there anything that would lead us to do it for manufactured mobile home parks versus another type of housing other than just saying we don't like them?
We need to draw the distinction.
Well, yeah.
It's not clear right now.
Let's say
I think
this.
It goes to the chairman was starting to say, and I don't know all the details, I wasn't here when this happened, but the start of zoning in Montville, one of the reasons for it was the mobile home parks that had been around, and that there needed to be some level of control. So I think our regulations are probably pretty old and haven't been looked at in a long period of time. And our eyes are open to maybe wanting to do something different.
I get that, and Bill, I think there's a good reason to do it, but it's got to be for a legitimate reason.
Then again, mm-hmm. we're having dialogue, so mm-hmm. I think it's something to think about. Mm-hmm. Think about the good, the bad, take a look at them, look at what's around. Let's see what comes up down the road, but, you know, it's...
Well, administratively, none of us at this... I'll speak for myself. There's a slight bit of confusion in my head between Millwood, Hillcrest, Williams Road, and a couple other trailer parks in town.
Well, the trailer park was a mobile home.
And I support your mindset on this administratively to get our heads wrapped around this and clean this up and understand and then put it on a piece of paper. I don't see any issue with doing a moratorium in that respect. Administratively understand what's happening. Which, am I understanding you correctly?
Yeah.
Okay.
And Dennis said we did it for a year, but then they wrapped their heads around it and we had all of our stuff. They could lift the moratorium?
Well, it would just expire on its own.
Yeah.
So
but they say in 8 months they're like, you don't want it anymore.
Oh, yeah, at any time it can be lifted. Yeah.
No, we're also working on strengthening our zoning regulations, so it'll take us a year to do that.
Yes.
And we'll be able to lift the moratorium because our zoning regs will specify what can be built, what can't be built.
It's not a lifetime ban.
It's just a pause. I look at it as like a pause. It's not that I'm looking to get rid of them all. I just think we need to take time, reassess.
We did this with cannabis establishments because we couldn't wrap our heads around it.
Yep,
that's right.
And then we lifted it, and we came to good regulations.
Yeah, because marked the site. Oh, I just look at it as what's over there on Fitchhill Road, that old trail park that's sitting there just rotten away.
Yeah, the old Chicago place.
Because, I mean, I don't know the status of the property or whatever, but I noticed there's gates up and no activity, and it's just an eyesore.
The state had come in.
Well, how about if you give some thought to the manufactured home world and, you know, let's discuss it.
If done right, done right.
Drive it one direction or another.
Do we want to move forward with an application for it or table this for now?
No, by opinion.
Why don't we discuss it at the
next meeting
and see if we have a more common ground. Sound all right?
Yeah. And if we can find out when was the last applications for mobile home park, which is for two trailers or more on a lot.
When was that?
Okay.
All right. Director's report continuing. TIF update. In your package, there's a draft policy and a draft master plan. We met with the Economic Development Commission. They would like to act as the advisory committee. I'll be going in front of the. I think I'll be getting on the agenda with the town council at their next meeting, May 11th, to talk with them about the policy itself and developing the master plan. I don't think we included the TIF district boundaries in your packet. We'll get that to you for the next meeting. But we have been working on TIF districts and the actual boundary. The intent is still to move forward with establishing that, hopefully by the end of this calendar year. I don't know why I put commissioner comments in the middle here, but the POCD housing plan, there was an email sent out by the mayor's assistant to all of the chairs asking for a representative to be appointed to the advisory committee. I don't believe this commission has done that yet. So we're asking that we have one member from various committees, various commissions, to appoint somebody. I think we've only heard back from Parks and Rec so far.
We approved Carol Burgess on our Tuesday Board of Ed meeting.
Okay. That might be who I heard, but how about this board? We didn't approve anybody yet, did we?
No, we haven't.
No.
Okay. So we'd like to do that because we'd like to get going probably in July. Mm-hmm. So
we need a representative.
That's right.
Kill me.
And again, this will be an advisory committee to you all.
Anyone interested in that position?
No, we're reviving.
Nope, I'm backing off.
Well, my wife will kill me.
Lisa?
Yeah.
I'm kind of busy. What time do they start?
What day?
7 yet.
Oh, hmm.
How often do they intend to meet?
Oh, here we go.
After the blue moon or what?
Every week? No, you know, probably every other month.
I'm interested.
Oh, great. Bill, I'm excited.
Oh, let her.
Sarah's interested.
Sarah's interested.
Good.
Okay.
You're young.
Sarah's got it.
Yeah, she's got it.
Good. Thanks, sir.
How'd you pass her off then?
She's the youngest.
Welcome
back. She's full of energy.
I will caveat nominate that, though.
Sarah. All right.
If and she gets to bring the baby.
If it's every other month, I can do it. If it's going to be every month.
I personally don't want another night meeting.
Okay.
Every month.
So, I got a 5-month-old.
It might be every quarter, you know. So.
5 months already?
5 months?
Uh-huh.
My God.
Wow.
You got a full head of hair now, huh?
All right. So,
give her a little thinking.
Oh, 5 months already.
We have Sarah.
So we need to make a motion.
Yeah, I'll make a motion that we appoint Sarah as our
representative.
For whatever it is.
For the POCD housing.
And I'll second that motion.
Any discussion?
Lisa, you sure?
Oh, all in favor.
All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone oppose?
You go.
Anyone abstain?
I'll abstain.
Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you, Sarah.
Yes.
So, and the next item, all of us at Norris, as you recall, they had provided a presentation and you voted not to support their request for extending the water and sewer, or to get the funding to extend the water and sewer to benefit the housing development. We have met with them since, and they might likely be moving forward with the parcels along Route 32, which is roughly 150 units. But we did have a call, we being the mayor, and I had a call, and Meredith was in that, with Matt Pugliese, the deputy commissioner of DECD, who I had corresponded and spoke with when we were considering, the commission was considering their request. And he again reiterated that there is no money. There is a $30 million thing out there, but we don't know where it's going. No thought of even being on the bond commission agenda at any time soon, et cetera, et cetera. So we're still hearing conflicting things from the development team versus what the state is telling us. So I'm leading with the state on this one. So I just wanted to give that update that that's happened.
Thank you.
And a lot of this has to do with, you know, with all of us at Norris, but we have been talking with Ron McDaniel and Derek Alberson at WPCA. We are working to, Catherine and Meredith are working to put together a list of all the projects that have been approved over the last decade or more, so that way WPCA can fully evaluate where they are with capacity for supplying water and accepting flows into the sewage treatment plant. We met and went through some numbers preliminarily last week, and there is definitely a need to understand that with where we stand now based upon our contracts with the tribe, with Rand Whitney, versus what the design flows are and where we are right now with the water that's being consumed and the effluent that is being accepted into the treatment plant. So they're working on that as we speak, but they're waiting for some information on us.
So I'm curious, from an engineering point of view, and Chuck to my right knows better than I do, how does the WPCA not know on a monthly basis through an engineering report their capacity, and how do they not know that information? They must have some records for years and years of development in the town, whether it's a casino or anything like that. It strikes me odd they have no records of this.
I can't speak to that.
Well, it sounds like
we're
record.
We're working with them to get that reconciled, though.
Okay. I would think it would be an engineering report on a monthly basis. Okay.
We are actually working on that now, and there's a lot of information from previous times that it's missing.
Thank you.
Yeah. And I know that there's a request out there to the WPCA for getting an allocation, and we spoke with council today just so we had an understanding of what we could do on the planning side, the commission might be able to do. Because if we're reaching the end of things, capacities, you know, we need to know that impacts everything. And now's the time to know, because with the housing growth plan that we need to create and the new bills that are out there, there could be money available for any expansion that needs to happen with expanding the water treatment facility, et cetera. So that's going to be important. Do you have anything you want to add on that?
No, that's spot on. Need to know the numbers so we can move forward with our, new plan.
Yeah, it's got to be a living document. Because as things come off, it has to be adjusted.
Okay.
That's all I have for my report.
Thank you, Dennis. Other business we have. Correspondence.
Personally.
All right, Dennis and or Meredith.
I'll take correspondence.
Could you take us through 13 A to Z?
What are you thinking? You can say. Go ahead.
Quickly read through them and it's all around to the
And on item D, we have an FOI request from a landowner abutting the Rand Whitney site, wanting to know the details of what is happening there. And Meredith is working to get the information together. She's looking for clarity from the landowner, and the landowner hasn't been responding to follow-up. So but we're trying to get that resolved. Related to all of us at North, and this goes to E&F, they filed an FOI request a couple of weeks ago. One is addressed to the commission, asking for information specifically related to the pre-application review for all of us at North. I gave it all to them, that I thought that they need, that they were needed, but it was a very vague. So if they need more information, they'll come back to us. They addressed one to me, which I take to the department, but they wanted everything on attachment A. Did they get attachment A? Yeah, so in attachment A, you'll see a list of revive and renew to other applications that have been recently reviewed and approved. But again, it was a blanket request. No idea what exactly they're looking for. It could take us months to put it all together. I did provide them with the information for the revive and renew, everything that I had that I thought that was applicable to them and their ask. Also provided, I think that was, there might have been something else in there. But anyhow, I provided with what I thought that they were looking for. You know, but then again, I asked for everything else. I asked them for clarity. So we sent out our response on Friday, and they should be, maybe we'll hear from them, maybe we won't.
Okay. All right, executive session this evening, we have none. Before we adjourn, just keep in mind, give some thought to manufactured home park so we can have that discussion next go around, and any of the items we left hanging so Dennis can start checking these off the list and we can get them in some sort of order to get them in our public hearing. Motion to adjourn.
We'll be in.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you.
I'll be right with you. And 1 second.